Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen an overview of Shaivam and Siddhanta. The title is Great Devotees, presented by Shiva Madhusudanan Kalaichelvam. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Vinnalum Devarkum Melaya Vediyanai, Mannalum Mannavarkum Manbahi Nindranai, தன்னார் தமிழளிக்கும் தன்பாண்டி நாட்டானை பெண்ணாளும் பாகனை பேணு பெருந்துறையில் கண்ணார் கடல் காட்டி நாயேனை ஆட்கொண்ட அண்ணாமலையானை பாடுதுங்கான் அம்மானாய் ஓட்டை மாடத்தில் ஒன்பது வாசலும் காட்டில் வேவதன் முன்னம் கடலடி நாட்டி நான்மலர் தூவி வலம் செய்யில் வாட்டம் தீர்ந்திடும் வான்மியூர் ஈசனே நீரூரும் செஞ்சடையாய் நெற்றிக் கண்ணாய் நிலாத்திங்கள் துண்டத்தாய் நின்னை தேடி ஓரூரும் தெரியாமே ஒற்றித்து எங்கும் உலகமெல்லாம் திரிதந்தும் நென்னை காண்பான் தேரூரும் நெடுவீதி பற்றி நின்று திசை திருமாலும் நான்முகனும் தேர்ந்தும் காணாது ஆரூரா ஆரூரா என்கின்றார்கள் அமரர்தம் பெருமானே ஆரூராயே கார்புருவும் கருங்கூந்தல் செவ்வாய் வெண்ணகை பச்சை கன்னியொடும் தார்கமழ் பூம் காந்தளந்தோ குமரனொடும் மணிசிங்காதனத்து மேவி சீர்பரவுவான் புலவர் நினைந்தன யாவையும் நல்கி சிறப்பில் வைகும் வார்புணல் சூழ் வயல் கமலை தேவர்கள் சிந்தாமணியை மனத்துள் வைப்பாம். With the abundant blessings of Thiruvarur Sri Ajabanadana Kamala Vasanta Tyagaraja Swami and the Acharyas, today we have met to get along with the fourth session of the 10-day series that Shaivam.org is organizing, and I am participating as a very humble offering to this wonderful knowledge bank for Shaivite tradition which several millions of us have been using for more than 2 decades now. So spread across 10 days and titled as An Overview of Shaivism and Siddhanta. The topics have been chosen to cover a general introduction to Shaivism in general and pick up important topics that helps us get introduced to Siddhanta, Shaiva Siddhanta in particular. Also a little on the other schools of Shaivam which I have been in practice for quite some time now. With Shiva as the almighty God, several branches of Shaivam has come up. Many of them are Veda based. They've all evolved out of philosophies that are harvested, the knowledge harvested through Vedas and the Upanishads and the way it is being interpreted. Yesterday's session was on the authority books of Shaiva, or to be more particular, Shaiva Siddhanta, which are referred to in collection as the Agamas. How the Agamas are venerated to be at par with the Vedas, but making a very important difference of being extremely specific without any ambiguity to Shaivism. Though it is placed on the same platform as that of Vedas and respected as much as the Vedas are generic text, and we saw how the Agamas are very specific in propagating Shiva Bhakti and establishing a path for us on which the journey is made much more comfortable to attain moksha. Vedagamas, as they are called, because they are like derivatives from the Veda. It gives a very structured syllabus to be followed by devotees right from their initial stages, the kind of services that they can do in the temples, services like lighting lamps, preparing the dhupam, cleaning the temples, sweeping, mopping the floors, washing the vessels that are used in the temple, helping with regular rituals, assisting them, maintaining flower garlands, stringing them together to make garlands of different sizes at appropriate hours for the rituals to adorn the Shiva murtis. And how this is one sort of a bhakti which has been understood better by the way Upper Brahman spent his way and the way he expressed his devotion to Shiva through the unmatched service of what is called as Udavaram, or that particular service which he rendered when he went on a long pilgrimage to several hundred shrines to clean the campuses, temple campuses, remove unwanted plants that are growing, removing stones from the pathway on which the devotees walk, and services like that. All of this called as the as Sharia and how that particular part of the Agamas detailed that out. Then we saw about the second part, which is the Kriya, and how the activities or services that Jnana Sambandha Peruman did can be associated with the different ways of bhakti in the Kriya part of Agamas. That includes developing a sense of interest in performing rituals, performing authorized rituals after attaining proper permission from an acharya through an initiation process at appropriate level, because the acharyas are best at measuring the depth of maturity. It isn't appropriate to hand over a complete temple to a new entrant and asking him to do the rituals. That cannot be done. So the seasoning of the soul is required, and that can be best understood by Ishvara. Next to him, it is only the acharyas who can understand the maturity that every devotee develops from within. At that appropriate level of maturity, he or she is initiated into a puja, a personal puja, through proper means, and a Shivalinga Murti for themselves is also gifted from the acharya, by the acharya, and he or she is taught the exact procedures to perform the rituals. What are all the qualifications to become an acharya at this level? And all of this is at a personal puja level. There is also the part of this agama, this part of the agamas which speaks about pararta puja, which is about conducting similar rituals at a more elaborate level with a simple aim of achieving global goodness, goodness for the complete universe, or pararta, it is for the betterment, welfare of every living being, believers, non-believers, people who don't know who Shiva is, everybody put together. Generally, the worship procedures that are done in a temple prays for the welfare of the whole universe and all of the people who are members to it. So you need more rigorous practices and a more deeper understanding of the philosophy to take up something as complicated as conducting, heading and conducting temple rituals. So as far as Tamil Nadu is concerned, we've had the age-old tradition of Shivacharyas performing this. And there are different branches in that depending on special features in a few temples. So they are initiated and brought into it. We've got books which speaks about, which are more clearer derivatives from the Agamas themselves, from the Mula Agamas themselves. We have later works like Agora Shivacharya Paddhati or Ishana Shivacharya Paddhati, etc., which are more like the Paddhatis, which are custom specific prescriptions which speaks about various activities in a temple and the rituals that are associated with it, the way to conduct it, the mantras that are involved and all that. So this is more understood through the songs and the services rendered by Jnana Sambandha Peruman. Then comes the third path, which is the third chapter in an Agama, which is the Yoga Bhagam, wherein after spending considerable amount of time into performing your rituals and with strict adherence to traditions, attaining a level of maturity both from within, most importantly from within, one enters into the third phase wherein you don't need to get yourself involved in physical puja, but all of the procedures and everything can be done by invoking Parameshwara from within. So getting initiated into dhyana and appropriate asanas for it, how do you do it, how many hours, the mantra that is to be concentrated upon, and that should ripen, and if one can achieve liberation at that level, he or she enters samadhi, and that is another way to moksha, and this is what is achieved by Sundaramurti Nayanar. Then fourth is the Jnana Bhagam, which is outrightly speaking the philosophy of Shaiva Siddhanta, the nature of Almighty God, the nature of the souls, the nature of the world around, the impurities that we earn through our activities, the different types of karmas, how they affect us, how do we carry over them from previous births, what happens to it, what is the way to get rid of it, and so getting yourself tuned to the Jnana texts, getting them as sermons, as lectures through acharyas, and attaining moksha at that level. Now this is the kind of life that was achieved by Manikavachakar. Unlike the other three, Manikavachakar's journey, the spiritual journey, started after a divine darshan of Sri Parameshwara And after Shiva himself gave him all the three kinds of celebrated dikshas, saw him with his divine eyes, touched him with his divine hands, and more importantly, gifted Manikavachaka, the greatest of gifts that anybody can ever expect, placing both his lotus feet, the Tiruvadi, his padas on the head of Manikavachaka and blessed him. So Manikavachaka's journey starts from there and it goes on. So this is the four margas, the four different components of the agamas, and as lived and explained to us through the four most celebrated saints. In Shaiva tradition, or for that matter any bhakti marga, after the gods and acharyas, it is the devotees who are the most revered. There is absolutely no difference in the thought that Shiva devotees are themselves Shiva. There are very many songs from our sacred scriptures, Tirumurais and our Shastras and in Agamas, how the greatness of Shiva's devotees are put at par with that of Shiva. Shiva devotees are considered to be walking shrines themselves, because each of them carry Shiva from within. They have Shiva enshrined in their Hridaya, and when they walk with it, they are like the walking temples or the walking shrines of Shiva. So says Tirumula. So the special space that is allotted for the Shiva devotees is at par with Shiva. That is why inviting a Shiva devotee home and praying to him is considered as Maheshwara Puja. The puja that you do to Parameshwara is Maheshwara Puja, and what you do to Shiva devotees is Maheshwara Puja. Greatness of Shiva Bhaktas fetches the same kind of listening, or speaking about the greatness of Shiva Bhaktas fetches the same punya as that of speaking or listening to the greatness of Shiva himself. The greatness of Bhakti Marga is at this level. So understanding the God better through his devotees, because unlike gods, unlike Parameshwara, these devotees are with us. They are around us. We can talk to them, we can interact with them. And due to their association with Shiva at a much higher plane, they help us understand the nature of God much better and much easier. So that is why maintaining a sense of humility in the association of Shiva devotees or in front of them has been time and again reiterated. Becomes extremely important to be as humble as possible before Shiva devotees. Now this tradition is something that starts from the Itihasa and Purana phase, wherein there are several stories time and again which speaks about how Shiva answered the calls of his devotees, removed their obstacles, helped them achieve the Jnana Nishtai, which is good enough to get them moksha. So that is time and again discussed. We have cases like where Vishnu himself has wanted to be a Shiva Bhakta and has performed Shiva Puja, prayed to Shiva so many times to be accepted as a devotee, and has achieved that level too. And when there have been requirements, like for example, when he wanted to have the Sudarshana Chakra for Asura Samhara and other things, Shiva had the Sudarshana Chakra initially, that was for Jalandhara Asura Samharam that Parameshwara used. So Vishnu prays to him to get it. So in case of these kind of obstacles that they face or a want, performing Shiva Puja like a Shiva devotee gets you the best benefit. So we can understand the greatness of Shiva Bhakti more through the Bhaktas. And there are several hundreds of Shiva Bhaktas, if not thousands, who are revered in the Puranas. We were seeing about the nature of Puranas, the 18 important Puranas, what they try to convey to us and all that. So we can recall, starting from Upamanyu Maharishi himself to several lakhs of rishis and people of different classes like that, how many of them have been performing Shiva Puja all through their life and get elevated to the level of being a Shiva devotee, and how the Shiva Bhaktas' greatness is brought out to us through scenarios where they are put to very stringent tests. Now in most cases, we are going to look at the stories of Nayanmar very soon, one thing that would be common is all these Bhaktas will strictly adhere to their dharma, which is their way of devotion to Shiva. Each of them had their own way. very strictly adhere to it, not compromise with it at any level of being tested. Finally, Shiva uses that scenario to help us understand the greatness of these bhaktas. Nayanmars in Shaiva Siddhanta are the most revered groups of devotees. Any Shiva devotee is to be revered, there is absolutely no doubt. But to understand it easier, we have a list of devotees who have been canonized and presented to us through our acharyas to be considered, to be prayed and worshipped at par with Shiva. So knowing their stories helps us build a sense of confidence to begin with. Because it's very easy for lame people to doubt the greatness of Shiva the moment they start facing sorrows or an obstacle in their life. I have been doing all this. I have an acharya. He has initiated me into Shiva Puja. I've been performing Shiva Puja all these years. Still, what has happened to me? Why am I not enjoying the benefits like other people? So this is the immediate question that hits many lame people like me. So the best way to feel strengthened is to listen to the stories of these Shiva Bhaktas, the Nayanmars especially. And the stories of these Nayanmars have been best documented and had been handed over to us. Of course, even before the Nayanmars, chronologically if we place them, most historians are of the opinion that the oldest, as we can see for today, starts from Karaikal Ammayar, that one most blessed Bhakta who was addressed as Shiva's own mother. Shiva addressed her as his mother. I'm not sure if there is another person who can be put at par with this special nature with which Parameshwara welcomed and introduced her to Parvati. So as of today, our historians, most of them feel that the oldest Nayanmar can be probably Karaikal Ammayar. And along with her, associated with the same era probably, are people like Kutruva Nayanar, Kannappar, Kochengotchodan, all of these people. But starting from Karaikal Ammayar, we have references to a few of them like Karaikal Ammayar and Kannappar in the works of Appar and Sambandar and Sundarar also. Sundarar of course has canonized all of them, so the list is there, but Appar and Sambandar also refers to a few of them. So we can be sure that they've all been there before. So singing the praise of devotees, thinking about it and accounting it in their verses and their own greatness has been a tradition here starting from the Devarams themselves. So it is a mandate. Now this aside, Appar of course belongs to the 7th century. Appar and Sambandar, both of them together in the middle of the 7th century, around 650, roughly keep like 1400 years back. So Sundarar follows them very soon in the next century and followed by Manikavachakar later. So Sundarar becomes the reference line for us, because the list of Nayanmars that he has given us first, he is the first person to give us the list. So all of them can be definitely put in a timeline before that of Sundara. So we have the list. And Parameshwara played a very interesting divine sport here also to involve Sundaramurthyar in an act through which the list of these Nayanmars were brought out. For this, Parameshwara chose Tiruvarur Mahakshetram, which is considered as the Moolasthanam for Shaivites. If Chidambaram is Koil or the temple, Moolasthanam is Tiruvarur. So Sundaramurthy Nayanar had a very personal relationship with Yagaraja Swami, the presiding deity of Tiruvarur. And of course, Sundaramurthy chose the marga of a friend, as a very close companion with whom everything personal, even personal, could be discussed. That's the kind of relationship that Sundaramurthyar had with Yagaraja Swami. And one fine morning, in Tiruvarur temple, there is a tradition. The moment you enter through the eastern Gopuram, immediately you see Shiva devotees turning to their right and prostrating in front of the Mandapa there, the thousand-pillared hall, which by itself is celebrated, a space which is celebrated, a Mandapa which is celebrated, even by Shekildar in several verses. It is called as the Devashriyan Genum Tirukkavanam. It is that common platform which is always filled by Shiva Bhaktas who are discussing the greatness of Shiva, mutually enjoying the companionship of Shiva devotees. That's the speciality of this space. It is so revered that by the mere presence of Shiva devotees and who are resonating with the greatness of Shiva, always talking about Shiva Mahima, people who enter the temple of Tiruvarur fall flat there, pray in front of Devashiriyan, and only then go into the next prakara where the Dvajastambha is to prostrate. So that is the speciality of Devashiriyan Mandapam. It was the times of Viranminda Nayanar, yet another Nayanmar, who was from Kerala, who has understood the greatness of the gatherings of Shiva devotees in Trivaru, shifted here, stayed there in Trivaru, and he was associated with the temple. And he was always a member in the Devashiriyan, the thousand pillared hall there, discussing Shiva Mahima with other devotees. So under such a circumstance, one fine morning, Sundaramurthy Nayanar walks into the temple. And in his urge to have a darshan of Tyagaraja, he skips the general tradition of praying to the Devashiriyan Thirukkavanam, which is filled by Shiva Bhaktas, and he goes in. Seeing this act of Sundaramurthyar, Viranminda Nayanar, who was one among the gathering, stood up and protested, said, "You shouldn't do this. How is it possible that you are not praying to Shiva Bhaktas here? What is that urge to pray to Shiva while his Bhaktas are waiting outside? Isn't it a tradition, and how can you beseech that? How can you betray that tradition?" And not knowing what to do and being cornered and being protested upon by Viranminda, yet another Nayanmar, Sundaramurthyar prays to Tyagaraja Swami, asking him to clarify what the position was. And once Tyagaraja, with his divine Leela, this is yet another Leela of Tyagaraja Swami, wanted to present to the world the greatness of all the Shiva devotees and says, "Know that what he says is right. That is the observed tradition. Even before praying to me, the tradition is to pray to my devotees. Express your humility to them, fall at their feet, after their blessings you come to me." And not knowing the greatness of these devotees, Sundaramurthyar requests Tyagaraja to help him understand the greatness of the devotees, and that is when Tyagaraja Swami says, gives him the first word, the opening sentence of what later gets elaborated into what is called as the Thiruthundar Thogai, one among the 100 titles sung in the 7th Thirumurai Thirupattu of Sundaramurthy Nayanar. As a tradition in several houses, an initiated Shiva devotee generally starts their day with this padigam, because this is a very important padigam which details out the greatness of the devotees of Shiva, the chosen devotees of Shiva. So to start your day by remembering them is the best way to start the day for a Shaivite. So Sundaramurthy Nayanar is blessed because he is going to compile and sing the greatness of devotees who have lived several centuries before him. People probably he wouldn't have heard about before. And there are people who were his contemporaries also in it. So it is the divine Leela of Tyagaraja Swami to use Sundaramurthy Nayanar as the person to compose this most divine Tirupadigam, which canonizes and lists out the Nayanmars for us. So the first divine sentence chosen by Tyagaraja Swami was to bring into account the 3000 sacred selfless Brahmin priests of Chidambaram who have been endowed with the greatest gift of performing the daily rituals to Nataraja Swami at Chitsabha. A tradition which dates back to as old as time is probably, we are not sure as to when this tradition started and since when they have been there. Traditional legends tell us that they have come along with Nataraja himself when he came down to perform the Ananda Tandava, and ever since they have been here performing the daily pujas to Nataraja Swami. So the residents of Chidambaram, they are all grouped together and considered as a Nayanmar. The designation or the position by itself is considered as that of a Nayanmar. So every member of the Dikshitas of Chidambaram are to be assumed as a Nayanmar. So it starts from there. That's the first sentence. Thillaivaal andanardam adiyarkum adiyen. That is what Tyagaraja helps Sundara with, gives it over to him. And from then on, Tyagaraja uses Sundaramurthy Nayanar to sing from within the most celebrated Tirupadigam called as Thiruthondar Thogai. So it starts from Sundaramurthyar, and he enlists 60 Nayanmars in his composition. So he brings out 60 of the individual Nayanmars and 9 Nayanmars who are celebrated as the Thogai Adiyargal. Now I just told you about the nature of Thillaivaal Andhanargal and how they are considered as it's a designation, and how all of them are Nayanmars individually also. So whenever you go to Chidambaram and you see a Dikshitar walk in front of you, they are to be revered at the same level as that of a Nayanmar. However you treat Jnanasambandha Peruman and Upper Peruman, that's how we bow to them, that's how we consider them. So it starts from there. So this is the line that Tyagaraja gave and Sundaramurthy starts singing from there. So there are 9 such Nayanmars or Adiyars who are represented through a group, and they are called as Thogai Adiyars. I'll elaborate about them a little later. So Sundaramurthy sings about 60 individual Nayanmars, and 9 of these combined groups of Nayanmars. So the individual Nayanmars are referred to as Thani Adiyar, and the remaining 9 are referred to as Thogai Adiyar. So that makes it 60 plus 9, 69. But you might ask me, we have always been referring to them as 63 Nayanmars. That tradition comes a little later after Sundaramurthy, because Nambiyandar Nambi, who lived a couple of centuries after Sundaramurthy, 2 or 3 centuries after Sundaramurthy, who is considered to be a contemporary of Rajaraja Chola, a great Chola king, uses this Thirthondar Thogai as a reference and elaborates it into what is called as Thirthondar Thiru Andadi. Andadi is a type of Tamil composition where the last words of the preceding song is used as the first word of the succeeding song, the next song. So it goes on like that. So the very first word used in the work will be the same as the last word of the last song. So it's like a cycle game, word play. So they use it and compose it. So he composes what is called as Thiruthundar Thiru Andadi, wherein Nambiyandar Nambi takes the liberty of including Sundaramurthyar, his father Shadayanar, and his mother Isainyaniyar as the remaining 3. So apart from the 60 individual Nayanmars sung about by Sundaramurthyar, the author of the work, Sundaramurthyar, and his parents, father and mother, are included as the remaining 3. Because in the last song of Thiruthondar Thogai, Sundaramurthyar signs off saying, this composition, which speaks about the greatness of the devotees of Tyagaraja Swami of Thiruvaru, has been composed by Sundaran, who is the son of Chadayanar and Isainyaniyar from Thirunavalur. So he signs it off. So their names are also included, the divine couple who have gifted us this great devotee called Sundarar. So they are also included into the list during Nambiyandar Nambi's time, and we have the list of 63 individual Nayanmars and 9 groups of Nayanmars. So that makes it a total of 72. Later on, this work, Sundaramurthy just venerates them in one line each. He just says, Thillaivaazhandhanardum Adiyaarkkum Adiyen. What will a person who is not used to the greatness of Thillaivaazhandhanargal, or who has not visited Chidambaram, who have not interacted with the Dikshitars, how will he or she understand their greatness? So Nambiyandar Nambi elaborates their greatness, individual greatness, into a set of 4 lines, into individual songs. And in some cases like that of Appar and Jnanasambandar, he gives them more than one song also. So Thiruthandar Thiru Andadi elaborates the greatness of each of these Nayanmars into more than one line, as one complete song itself for 4 lines. That is there. Now, later on, at a much later stage, 2 centuries after Nambiyandar Nambi's time, we have Shekhilar Perumaan, who is believed to have been there around the 12th, 13th century. And so his contribution is one of the grandest works of Tamil literature, Shaivite literature, and Indian literature even. Because he has taken references from Sundaramurthyar's Thiruthondar Thogai, which was used and elaborated by Nambiyandar Nambi into Thiru Andadi. He extends it by multiple times and makes one of the most celebrated works called Periya Puranam, or the Thiruthondar Puranam as he called it. So that is a very, very celebrated work. In fact, that becomes the 12th Thirumurai to complete the list of Thirumurais for us. And it is referred to as Periya Puranam, because it speaks the greatness of all the big people. You might think that because the book is voluminous with several thousands of songs, it's called Periya Puranam, but a more appropriate reason would be because it details out the life history of people who are really great. As Thiruvalluvar says, the great people are the ones who do things which might look very unnatural to others, which might look not so used to others. So all these Nayanmars have reacted that way. Given that particular scenario to us, we would have definitely not reacted the same way that the Nayanmars reacted. So that makes them very different from common people like us. So they are revered to as the great people. And so their life history is compiled into one of the greatest works that Tamil literature has ever seen as Periya Puranam, and is a very, very a worshipped work, in fact. So that is where it is put. So this is Shekhar's work, I mean, it is much beyond the scope of 10 days or even 100 days to speak about the complete greatness in all its best about Shekhar's Periyapuranam. But I will introduce it when we speak about the Thirumurais later. But as of now, that is one of the most authoritative book when it comes to understanding the life history of these Nayanmars. So compiling the life history starts from Sundaramurthy's time in the 7th, 8th century and goes all the way up to the 12th century of Shekhar. So at different times, three of these important works, there are several other works which were intermediary works, which speaks about one particular Nayanmar in some cases or otherwise, but these three are the most revered works and Shekhar's work is unparalleled. One cannot really be sure as to what is the kind of research interest that Shekhar Berman had and what was the methodology that he adapted to collect so much data about each of the Nayanmars who lived a good close to thousand years before, a millennium before, various parts of South India. How did he get to collect data about their communities, their activities, their travel from one place to another, all their episodes in life, the people whom they encountered, and all of it? It is definitely a divine intervention that could have made it possible to compile a work like that. So these are the three works that helps us, and to be totally non-doubtful about the life history of an Nayanmar, the best source, or rather the only source to depend upon, would be Shekhar's Periyapuranam. Because as I told you, the episodes in the life history of these Nayanmars vary by and large from the way we face things in our daily life. So there are a lot of possibilities to confuse oneself with the way the Nayanmars attempted their devotion, the way the Nayanmars exhibited their devotion. So there are a lot of ways to get confused, and it is always better to refer Shekhar when it comes to a doubt that somebody might have when it comes to the life history of Nayanmars. And a couple of things that are common throughout is these Nayanmars, each of them from various sections of the society belonging to different Varnas, different time periods, different regions of South India probably, all of them have been common in one aspect: choosing their dharma or their way of bhakti to Shiva. They all choose one particular way of expressing their bhakti and stand within that, stand to it with absolutely no compromise. Come what may, none of them have ever given up. If anything, the last thing that they chose is to spare their life when the test becomes immense and there is absolutely nothing that they could do at that level. They think that they cannot do at that level. But the best possible solution that several of them have thought for that moment is to spare their life, because they cannot withstand seeing their own dharma fail or their own regular devotion fail. Whatever they could offer, however simple it was, or whatever journey they took, however challenging it was, they never made any compromise in it. And in all cases, to show their greatness to us, so that we, after thousands of years, remember them, be reminded of their great bhakti, and speak about them, and earn a lot of Shivapunya, Parameshwara puts them to very severe tests, and they withstand it by the grace of Parameshwara again. There is not an iota of thought in them that they are doing anything or that they can control anything. They just take the flow as Shiva walks them through and perform it and ensure that their bhakti for Shiva and his devotees are never diluted, or a chance to express their bhakti is missed. And almost in all these episodes, the final sections would be on how they were tested, and Shiva relieves them of all that is holding on to them in this world and gives them the divine darshan, always along with Uma Parvati, and takes them to Kailasha. So this is the general notion that is to be understood from their life. So they are from various different economic background, various different social background, various different regional background, but nothing has differentiated, none of these factors were powerful enough to differentiate the magnitude of bhakti they had for Parameshwara.